Well, good morning, family. Good to see all of you this morning. Glad that you made the choice to be here. Want to welcome our visitors as well. I know Eric already talked about it some, but I'll mention it again. Please don't hesitate to fill out that card that's on the back of the chair in front of you so we can get a record of your attendance. If you're wondering who to give it to Eric. He was the most identifiable person up here so far this morning. Or give it to any of us that have been up here today. We'd be glad to have a chance to talk with you. If you want to open up your Bibles to Galatians chapter 4, that's where we're going to find ourselves this morning after we get through some of the body life announcements for the week. It's nice. This week is not near as crazy as last week was with all of the different things going on, whether it was just cookout, prayer meetings, all of the things that we had happening last week. This week, the first thing on the calendar is SMILE. SMILE stands for Sisters Meeting in Love and Encouragement. That is this Tuesday evening at 5:30 p.m. Sunny is still taking RSVPs for this. Now, here's the deal. The number of RSVPs she has right now has made her wonder if McAllister's is large enough to hold all of the ladies that want to participate in this. So she's going to be making a phone call tomorrow or Tuesday, once she has that final number of RSVPs. So ladies, be on the lookout for a message to come out for a possible, notice I did not say it is, but a possible venue change depending on what McAllister's can do for you guys that evening. But let Sunny know if you're wanting to be participating in that. I'm going to continue to encourage you. Check the back table for sign-up sheets. There's opportunities and things that are going on that we can be involved with as a body. Eric, I think, said it well when he was talking about the importance of unity in the worship, but that extends just beyond that to the service that we render to each other and to our community. Bobby has very specific needs on the transportation front. If you're willing to use your personal vehicle to pick folks up and get them here for Bible class and worship, he'd like to know that. Put your name on the sheet. Talk to Bobby about it. It's back there on that back table. And then there's also the Christmas gumbo party for December 3rd that Miss Karen has a sign-up sheet in the back for on that. I think Karen is taking care of all of the rice. There's other things that we need to do to have fill in on that. We continue looking at what it means to act like a son this week from Galatians chapter 4. And last week, we talked about the concept of as sons, we've come into our inheritance that we are no longer dependent upon the guardian and manager. And I was thinking this week of, you know, last week we talked about Zazu. This week it's Uncle Argyle. You guys know who Uncle Argyle is? Come on. It's from the least historical movie on William Wallace's life, Braveheart. All right. Remember that William's parents had been killed or his father had been killed, and his uncle comes in. And all William wants to do is grab that sword that he sees in front of him. And Uncle Argyle holds it up, and he whacks him on the skull, and he says, first, you need to learn to use this, and then I'll teach you to use this. And so then he goes away, and then the next time you see William Wallace, he's an adult. He's finished with that guardianship of living under Uncle Argyle, learning how to read and write and do all of these other things and use a sword. But there had to be a time where he had to be mentored, where he had to be taught. And that's what the law was, according to Paul's argument that we looked at last week. And now, we're no longer under that guardianship, no longer under that tutor. We're no longer slaves, and we're not treated like slaves. Paul's point has been that we are in a very real and legal and spiritual sense sons of God. And as sons or heirs of God, we now have the discretion and the wisdom that is necessary to move forward without our guardian, okay? That we're no longer dependent on the guardian or manager, but now we are dependent upon the Father who has adopted us and made us sons. And this simple lesson has been perverted by these teachers that have come in through the Galatian region, adding to the gospel and really just duping these Galatian Christians with their story. And this is seriously confusing to Paul. He doesn't understand how a person can go from being free and a son back to being a slave. This was a point that Mark was making as we gathered around the table this morning. You can't imagine that. And then when he talks about, as he gets a little bit deeper into the text, and we'll see it here in a second when we read it, there's going to be almost a cry of exasperation from him as he's just trying to understand what is going on with these Christians. And understand, when we get into the concept of verse 10, where he talks about observing days and months, this is in reference to the Jewish calendar, which makes sense if you've got Judaizers coming in teaching the law as part of the gospel through all of it. And this is just proving just another burden that they're placing on these folks and that they bought into. But I want to say, before we get into reading it, I want us to understand, at its heart, what is exasperating Paul the most seems to be that the inheritance as sons that they have received from God, they have outright refused or denied. They have refused or denied the inheritance. So let's start chapter 4. We're going to start in verse 1. Look at the entire argument as a whole as we read through verse 11. Now I say, as long as the heir is a child, he does not differ at all from a slave, though he is owner of everything. But he is under guardians and managers until the date set by the father. So also we, while we were children, were held in bondage under the elemental things of the world. But when the fullness of the time came, God sent forth his son, born of a woman, born under the law, so that he might redeem those who were under the law, that we might receive the adoption as sons. Because you are sons, God has sent forth the spirit of his son into our hearts, crying, Abba, Father. Therefore, you are no longer a slave, but a son, and if a son, then an heir through God. However, at that time, when you did not know God, you were slaves to those which by nature are no gods. But now that you have come to know God, or rather to be known by God, how is it that you turn back again to the weak and worthless elemental things to which you desire to be enslaved all over again? You observe days and months and seasons and years. I fear for you that perhaps I have labored over you in vain. Okay, let's talk about law real quick for a second. Roman law, much like our law, will cause your eyes to bleed and send you running and screaming for the hills if you spend too much time reading it. Okay? It's ridiculous. In fact, I just highly recommend that you read some of it if you're interested in those special headaches that come that kind of form right under the base of your skull and creep down into your eyebrow or eyeballs on that. You are going to just really hate yourself by the time you're done reading it. It's horrible to read. But it does shed some light on what Paul is talking about here in the text as it pertains to inheritance and sonship of the people that he's writing to. Now, Paul's point has been and is that the law, and here's the deal. I don't care if this is big L or little L when we read law, all right? It could be, and you guys know what I mean when I say big L or little L. Big L law being law of Moses, little L being just the law of men through this. I don't care. The law is a tutor, it's a guardian, it's a manager that taught and led to Christ. Now, according to Roman law, and when we start talking specifically about Roman law of inheritance, the first question that has to be answered is does the person have the capacity to take what is given? If they're going to inherit something, can they handle it? That's the first question, according to Roman law, that has to be answered. And Paul has already said it, that it's by faith and through faith that we come into the inheritance and we become heirs. So the answer to the first question of does the person have the capacity to take what is given is yes. The Galatians, we have the capacity to receive the inheritance. We can handle it. God has faith that we can handle it. And from there, well, it's just pretty convoluted as to how a person accepts the inheritance. And so we'll leave Roman law behind for a little bit. But Roman law made concessions for an individual if they wanted to refuse or deny their inheritance. And that's where it really does get interesting, right? Because say a person wants to refuse their inheritance. The first way that they would do that would be because they have debt. And they have a lot of debt. And they could refuse it. This would be if the heir was a son or a daughter, and the local magistrate allowed the selling of property if the testator had outstanding debt. So anything that would be coming to them, they wouldn't get because it would have to be sold off to pay their debts. And so that would be a refusal of the inheritance. The next would be having to do with whether or not you were a slave. Okay? A slave could be made an heir by the master. And upon the death of the master, the slave would then be freed, and then they would be granted the inheritance from their master. However, if the slave was sold to another master before the original master dies, the slave's new master could then choose whether or not to allow the inheritance to be accepted. If the master granted it, then that new master becomes the heir, not the slave. Okay? Only a freedman or a son could accept the inheritance. Go back to chapter 4 and verse 7, guys. Therefore, you are no longer a slave, but a son. And if a son, an heir through God. So not only do we have the capacity to accept the inheritance, we are freedmen and sons. There's a double blessing that comes in that, according to law. And you go to Paul's sorts of confusion, this refusal of the inheritance or the denying of the inheritance that they've been given in Jesus. Reason one, remember we had said that you could refuse the inheritance if there was a debt issue? Well, that doesn't exist spiritually, does it? Do we owe a debt on this, or has that debt already been paid spiritually by Jesus? Jesus took care of the debt issue, so there's no reason to refuse the inheritance that God is bringing because you have debt, okay? And I understand that under Roman law, the heir assumes all responsibilities of the testator, but the one making the will had to have the rights that are capable of being transferred, okay? So if we're giving the promise of an inheritance, God has to be able to have the ability to transfer that right, and he does. There's no debt that's involved. God has the ability to transfer that inheritance onto us. It's all taken care of specifically from a legal standpoint. A slave cannot be a testator because a slave doesn't own anything. And here's where the rubber meets the road for these guys and for us too. That we've got to answer the question. And here's the deal, guys. When I ask you this question, no, this is binary. There's no in-between on this. You either is or you ain't. So are you a son or are you a slave? There's no in-between. You either are a son or you are a slave. That applies spiritually, and that also applies to what we've been talking about under the actual physical law. And if we're sons, if we answer that question, I'm a son. I say I'm a son. I know I'm a son, that by faith I have received the promise. I have been made an inheritant, an heir worthy of the promise that God has made through Abraham, all of those things. Then I'm going to operate by faith. And that faith, that sonship, puts an obligation on me. That I have to keep being free. I have to keep the liberty that freed me. Think of our reading, right, in Romans chapter 8. Go back there and look at it again if you've forgotten it. Look at what Paul says here. He says, "So then, brethren, we are under obligation, not to the flesh or to live according to the flesh or to live according to that which we were enslaved to before we were made free. For if you're living according to the flesh, you must die. But if you live by the Spirit, you are putting to death the deeds of the body, you will live. For all who are being led by the Spirit of God, these are the sons of God. You have not received a spirit of slavery leading to fear again. You have received a spirit of adoption as sons by which we cry out, Abba, Father." Remember, we talked about this last week, as these words are a confession of the relationship that we have with God as sons. The Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are children, and if children, heirs, heirs of God, fellow heirs with Christ, if indeed we suffer with him so that we might be glorified with him. Did you guys notice what Paul said at the very beginning of that text? We're under obligation. Not to live according to the way we were, but to live according to the way we are. And what we are is sons. And as freedmen, as sons, we're under obligation to live according to the inheritance that has been passed down to us. But to live by the Spirit, to live by faith. That's what acting like a son looks like. Now, if you're a slave, you give up the choice of accepting the inheritance or not. You put it into the hands of your master. And while specifically it's not referring to being slaves to Christ here, I think it applies. But Paul's point in this is that you have chosen. You have chosen to give your inheritance to no gods. You have refused your inheritance in God. You have refused and denied the co-heir with Christ and given it to a no god. You've given it to a god of your imagination. You've given it a god of your own choosing that you have made that does not have the power to free you. It only has the power to enslave you, and you've given that to them. Because you denied what the real God did for you. You're acting like a slave. That you've turned all of this over, according to what he says there, to the elemental things. Those things that cannot bring salvation. You've denied that. Not for you. Is it any wonder then why Paul says that he's afraid for them? And I'll be up front with you guys. I know that we're given that choice on a regular basis, right? To whether we're going to act like a son or we're going to act like a slave. And it is far easier to act like a slave. It's far easier to just relinquish those types of obligations and decisions to our master, our no master, or our new master. The greater obligation comes from choosing to act the way a son would act. That we understand what has been transferred to us as part of this inheritance. And do we understand and appreciate what has actually been transferred to us as part of that inheritance package that we receive from God the Father? The biggie, forgiveness of sin. Salvation. The blessings that come from knowing that the Father has full confidence in us that we can act and operate as sons in this world. Doing what your father would do. Not acting like a slave, but acting as a son would. The slave is super happy to let his master have the inheritance. But here's the deal. If you're a slave, can you trust your master to do what's right by you? And that's why it's better to be a son. Because I can trust the Father to do what's right by me. But the minute I refuse and turn over my inheritance to a no God, he's going to act according to what he wants, not according to what's right by me and what's good for me. And the sad commentary is, guys, there's a lot of people living in this world, perhaps you're even sitting in this room, who have refused and denied the inheritance that God has given you. You've turned it over. And the master that they're serving, perhaps even that you're serving today, will not take one bit of consideration of your well-being into consideration when they make use of that inheritance. And they will use and abuse you. But a father who turns over his inheritance to a son or a freedman, who understands the obligations that come with being a freedman and a son, knows the blessings that come by maintaining the liberty that we have been given, by staying free. If you are a slave this morning, I fear for you. I do. Sell yourself to the elemental things. Don't give yourself over to all of the silliness that is out there. Turn yourself over to the Father. Allow Him to free you and act as a free man. He has the confidence that you can do it. And for those of us that are sons and are acting as sons, keep acting like sons. Keep being who God has called you to be and made you into. Let Him receive the praise. Let Him receive the glory for the behaviors that you set as you set the example for those around you, here and outside of these four walls. But God thinks that we can act like sons. That gives me the confidence to know that I can, and you can, and we will act like sons. Justice has a song for us, Beneath the Cross of Jesus. And this is really where we take our stand, isn't it? That trysting place where heaven's love and heaven's justice meet is one of the lines in this song that always gets me when you think of what was accomplished in that cross that Jesus hung from. That God's love and His justice hung equally so that humans, us, could have the opportunity of freedom, salvation, and redemption. That to be brought into God's family, to where we could make the cry of Abba, Father. That we could make the confession of relationship and we could live for Him. If you're not part of that, having that relationship this morning, now's the time. Make the confession of Jesus. Be baptized for the forgiveness of your sin. Be a son and not a slave. Whatever we can do for you this morning, we encourage you. Make it known by coming forward while we stand and sing.